Legend has it that Frank Sinatra wouldn't step on stage with either of his feet without...
Either all two of them.
All two of them. Neither one would step on a stage anywhere without two fingers of Jack Daniels and a cigarette.
It sounds really cool, but I couldn't imagine anything worse.
I agree.
Than going on a stage and singing. For I would imagine he's doing pretty long sets.
Oh, yeah. He was a resident performer for a long time, wasn't he?
But like, just like absolutely shredding your vocal cords.
This week on the liner notes, we take a look at Frank Sinatra's poorest selling album and one of my personal favourite albums of all time, Watertown.
It's a great album.
It is.
It is.
It is.
It's very good.
We've had a lot of intense episodes of late. Big subjects. I think we wanted to do something just a little bit more relaxed. And I think the hope is that the episode inspires people to go and have a listen for themselves.
Yeah, definitely.
Would you agree?
Yeah, well, they really should.
Yeah.
Especially this album.
Yeah. It's kind of unknown, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
More of a chilled out album, though.
It deserves.
It's not one of these big, pumped up albums.
Yeah, it doesn't need to be. It's good, mate.
No,
it is.
I think it's his best album, but
it's a beautiful story.
It is. It's a beautiful story.
Mm. In 1969, Frank Sinatra sales were hitting the heady heights those old blue eyes were used to. The year saw the singer release the album A Man Alone, which didn't sell as hoped. Meanwhile, Frank was wondering what to do next. The Four Seasons' main songwriter, Bob Gaudio. Gaudio?
Gaudio.
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 He's not Italian, but...
He's not, but that's what the YouTube links...
Pronunciation video said.
Yeah. So Bob Gaudio had written a new concept album.
Oh.
A love story tinged with sadness. When Frankie Valli showed little interest, he took it to Sinatra.
That was nice.
And I think it's better.
Yeah.
Like... If that Sinatra singing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's worked out well.
It's done very well. Gaudio, pre-Watertown, had a pretty great list of songs which he had penned for the Four Seasons, including their number one hit, Sherry.
Sherry!
Along with Big Girls Don't Cry.
Big Girls Don't Cry.
Begging.
Begging. Begging you.
And... Can't take my eyes off you.
You're just too good to be true.
Just to name a few.
Oh, that was a toss, though.
John's mini Frankie Valli medley.
Call me the Jersey Boy. Towards the latter half of the 1960s, pop music was changing. Artists were striving to create more socially conscious music. Concepts like Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band were in full flow, and the times truly were a-changing.
Oh.
For better or for worse.
Oh, see what you're doing there.
Little Bob Dylan pun there.
Wow.
Hey, punion rings.
Not skip past anyone that.
That's the one. That's the one.
One night, whilst in Greenwich Village, Bob Gaudio came across a young singer-songwriter named Jake Holmes. Gaudio and Holmes hit it off, and Bob decided to use Holmes' song, Genuine Imitation Life, as a basis for a concept album for the Four Seasons. The album in question is Would You Believe It? The Genuine Imitation Life Gazette?
Never.
Really?
I did not know that information.
Wow.
I wasn't sure if you should guess it.
To be fair,
or not,
I actually didn't know that information until the day.
Yeah.
It's good. Oh, yeah. It's an amazing album, honestly.
I'm here to teach everyone.
Is he till Thursday?
Well, it didn't sell very well at all, and its singles barely broke into the charts.
The charts.
And I think it's such a drastic change from Sherry.
Sherry!
That's the one. And, well, I'm not going to say the names, but the other hit singles from the Four Seasons. But maybe a bit much for the trends at the time. Which, again, is strange because it seems very in tune with what people were after back then. I don't know. Bloody hippies.
You know, I bought this album years ago, actually. Imitation Life Gazette.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really intimidating because it came, like, wrapped up from eBay in, like, loads of cardboard.
Mm.
And he opened it up and I was like, the newspaper. I've been duped here. But then like, it's designed that way.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just like a full pull-out newspaper, mm-hmm. where, like, folds out, full broadsheet.
All right.
It's really cool, but it was, like, really musty because it was old and I bought it second-hand off eBay. Yeah. And it was just, like, this musty paper in my collection. I was like, this is strange. Anyway, I put it on and it's absolutely brilliant. Like, totally recommend listening to Genuine Imitation Life Gazette. It's a cool, cool thing. And it's, like... It's tackling war and racism, which are quite heavy topics, but I think that the reason it was maybe lost on people was because it was coming from Frankie Valli,
mm-hmm.
and people are used to Sherry and the hits and it's maybe just a bit much, but like you're saying, it seems like that's what people were after back in the day.
Yeah,
but who cares? You know, well, I care, but like it's strange how the world works sometimes.
It is indeed.
Anyway, it's a treat. So definitely check it out. But the album design itself on a visual level is quite innovative, and Jethro Tull used it for, like, it was inspired by it for Thick as a Brick, which is also a broadsheet, very similar. And John Lennon used, like, newspaper, like, styling on an album cover as well. That's pretty interesting.
That is very interesting. Jake Holmes famously wrote Dazed and Confused, to which Led Zeppelin gave no credit until, I think, a live box set in the late 2000s.
Obviously.
In which the liner notes...
Oh.
Wow.
It is written, Dazed and Confused, written by Jimmy Page, inspired by Jake Holmes.
Of course it is.
Do you think we should, like, do that? We'll just rewrite Stairway to Heaven and then just be like, oh, yeah, written by the liner notes, inspired by Jimmy Page.
Yeah. Use the same trick.
Yeah. I'm assuming that their legal team won't have any problems with that.
Oh, definitely
no.
Nah, definitely.
Yeah. I mean, like, I feel like a lot of people have, like, different kind of thoughts on this, because I remember speaking to somebody and they were like, oh, well, back then everybody just stole everything off everybody and nobody gave credit to anything.
Doesn't make it right, though.
It doesn't, does
no,
it?
No, it doesn't make it right.
Like, credit where credit's due.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Led Zeppelin would be the first ones to pull out the old chord trick if someone sampled it on a hip-hop song or something like that.
100%. Yeah.
Exactly.
Get your bloody morals right.
Yeah. I feel that maybe Frankie Valli just didn't want to try another concept album for a while.
Yeah.
After Imitation Life Gazette. At least that's what I imagine, is it didn't sell very well. You can imagine, you know, like, your first kind of try at doing something a bit different and it doesn't really do that well.
Yeah.
You'd be like,
You're not really going to go back to it.
Yeah.
You're not going to keep flogging the dead horse.
Yeah. So you can maybe understand why it was a bit standoffish.
Yeah.
But maybe he just thought he couldn't do it justice.
Apparently he's just, like, going to release another Begging sort of gone.
He's
like, we need to get back to those hits, man. Better hits.
I mean, you would, though. Like, because they're obviously going to be bringing in the dollar.
Yeah.
And, like, that's, you know.
Bob Gaudio was like, no, we need to push this artistic movement forward. Frankie Valli's like, give me the money, man. Show me the money.
Yeah.
Pop music.
Yeah. I mean, I'm all for, like, you know, pushing the boat out and doing weird stuff with your music, but sometimes it doesn't work.
Sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you shouldn't try it.
It doesn't.
Keep an open
mind,
guys.
You should never play it safe.
No.
Always take risks. Life's about risks.
Sound advice from Michael there.
It is.
Feel like you're in agony aunt now.
I am. Tell me your worries.
He is in agony, I tell you that.
Fun fact. Frank Sinatra was buried with a bottle of Jack Daniel's whiskey, a packet of Camel's cigarettes, a Zippo lighter, and a dollar worth of dimes, just in case he needed to use a payphone.
Watertown isn't the cheeriest affair.
It is not.
The album is the story of a family, a mother, father, and two sons, and one day, Mom decides she's going to give up her family life, leave, and get away from this little town, heading for the big lure of the city.
It just seems that she could maybe have taken all of them.
Yeah. Like, it's pretty nasty, isn't it, really?
Yeah, like, just abandoning your entire family.
Pack up and leave.
Seems to me like a bit of an excuse. She doesn't really like them.
No.
Anyway, what's interesting about the album is it's the only one in Frank Sinatra's catalogue where he recorded the vocals after the music had been finished.
Oh.
So Frank Sinatra's favourite setup was like a traditional one, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
An orchestra, musicians in the room, and he would sing with them while it's recording.
I can see why that would be the preferred choice.
That's probably how he's done it all his life.
feed off the energy.
Yeah, yeah, he's a cool guy. Like, you can imagine the orchestra.
It's because he's whiskey.
Yeah, they've set up, mm-hmm. they've run through, and then Sinatra turns up with his Jack Daniels and his cigarettes.
Imagine how foggy that room would be by the end of it. Because I guarantee he wasn't the only one having a smoke.
Exactly, yeah, definitely. So it's amazing when you think about like the arrangements of the songs were already down, and the recording of the instruments and the orchestra was already done. Mm-hmm. And then Sinatra sings on over the top, mm-hmm. which is quite modern practice now.
Yeah, yeah.
He built a track up, but mm-hmm. back then that's a pretty good like foresight. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like he's thinking ahead. He's having to like.
I wonder if he suggested himself or.
I don't know.
I'm assuming a producer might have done it, but.
I do feel it helps. Benefit it helps the recording, mm-hmm. benefits the recording, but we'll get into why that might be in a little bit. But it might not be the most interesting fact, but it certainly tickles my old musical pickle.
Oh,
hey,
hey, gross!
God,
doesn't have to be rude. My musical pickle.
I preferred your Bob Dylan pun.
So, like you said, this story kind of follows. A man in this journey of kind of losing his wife, and there's a little bit of debate whether or not she's actually just left him or whether she's died.
Yeah.
And I think that's obviously there is like reference to the fact that she has left.
Yeah.
In throughout the album, but it's so like
it's nostalgic, isn't it? It's
yeah. Very... Like because there's so much like love in it, you know. Like there's a lot of songs where he's talking about like. Being in love, still in love with this person.
Yeah, and he's not ready to move on and things.
Yeah, there's not really any anger there, which you would find in
like a breakup.
Yeah,
he's very accepting.
Mm-hmm.
But she does like. I mean, some of the lyrics do say that she's telling him goodbye.
Yeah.
So there's a juxtaposition there, but it's a nice thought. It's a nice little theory.
It is. Yeah. But we're not in a conspiracy theory.
No,
today.
We've finished the conspiracy theories with The Shining.
Yeah.
Michael's finally taken off the tin hat.
I have. So it's obviously a stark contrast from normal Sinatra songs that we used to hear. And, you know, we've got like My Way. Do you want to chime in with?
Oh, no.
Can't really do that one as well. Fly Me to the Moon. You know, those kind of...
You're more of a Frankie Valli guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, more of a Frankie. I can do the... I can't.
Yeah. And, you know, those are kind of like big, like triumphant kind of sounding songs. And it's like very typical of the music that was popular in...
The big band.
Yeah,
thing.
Like in America at the time, you know, like, you know, post-war kind of like everybody's like, way!
Get in.
And like those dance. Songs kind of reflect that.
Yeah.
And in this album, even though you can definitely still tell that it's Sinatra because he's got such like an iconic voice, there's a completely different quality to the voice, and there's not this kind of like masculine confidence that's kind of booming through with all of these other works, and instead I feel like you get like more of a real Sinatra.
It's a delicacy to it.
Yeah, it's like he's empathizing with a character that's going through a lot of pain. And it's just a really beautifully written and performed album.
I would 100% agree.
Mm-hmm.
I think it shows how good Sinatra is, though, that he like gets in the mind frame.
Yeah,
of the man who he's singing from.
Yeah, and it's like it's this thing like to change your voice when you're singing. You know, like it's so easy to just be like booming through it how you would normally do it.
Mm-hmm.
But even like little inflections in some of the words that he's saying in the song. It's not even like an entire song has its own feeling. There's like conflicting emotions in a song as well. And it's just really 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 well done.
I mean I think that it's quite famously known that Sinatra would turn down work if he didn't feel that he wanted to do it had to be important to him to actually go ahead with making an album or recording some songs, so you can tell that he obviously cared about it.
So for me, this is I think for all of us in this room and anybody who's listened to this album, it's definitely something that you have to listen to in full.
Yeah,
like there's some really great songs on there that you would listen to kind of individually, but especially the first time that you put this on, listen to the whole thing,
dim the lights,
maybe have a glass of wine
or whiskey,
two fingers of whiskey, maybe a cigarette,
if you want to push it out there. We don't condone it.
I was gonna say, don't condone that.
It could add to the effect,
but you know, really get those emotional juices flowing.
Mm-hmm.
yeah you might then become so overcome with it that you might just break down into tears.
Very high possibility with this album.
Yeah, because it is, it's genuinely one of the most emotive and moving pieces of like music, like as a whole, that I've ever heard. Yeah. You know, there's a lot of albums that have like sad songs on them that tug on your heartstrings a little bit, but nothing that it kind of does it on this kind of scale. Like, this is the whole theme of the album, and each song has like its own little kind of message that it conveys and stuff about like a time in this kind of character's life.
So regarding what you said earlier, Michael, one of Frank Sinatra's talents really shines throughout this album. How he controls his performance to represent a lyric, you know, with those inflections that you mentioned. It really shows how important the delivery of his vocal is, especially in such an emotional setting as Watertown. The song Goodbye, She Quietly Says, is a great example of this. This is the second track on the album, and it's where the narrator is explaining that his wife is leaving. And the lyrics are, "There is no great big ending, no sunset in the sky. There is no string ensemble, and she doesn't even cry. And as I begin to say that we should make another try, she reaches out across the table, looks at me and quietly says, goodbye."
This is a really, like, it's a beautiful song, this.
It is.
I feel like it's quite complex. Especially in the instrumentation, and like, because they're constantly jumping between like major and minor keys, but done in a really nice way.
Yeah. In that moment of hope where he's singing, as I begin to say that we should make another try, his voice feels confident and full. It's very, like, the music's building, and that's completely shattered when she says goodbye, when the narrator says goodbye, because it's soft, and there's the slightest pause just before he says it, and it makes you all emotional and sad. He just nailed how to convey a story through just a simple line and the delivery of it.
There's one thing that I just want to kind of draw people's attention to. If you've heard this before, if not, go have a listen. But there's a really kind of cool musical technique that's thrown into this, and it's, you know, at the end of every chorus when they say goodbye, the majority of the song's in a minor key. So, you know, minor keys typically
sad.
For Western people is very sad. And there's something that happens right at the end, and it's called a plagal cadence.
Oh, Michael, what is a plagal cadence?
So please, a plagal cadence is something that is found in a lot of Christian-based religious music. And it basically means, so you've had a song that's been playing the majority of it has been in a minor key, and then the last little section, the last little note is major. And basically what that does is it kind of gives you this like impression that, you know, like things are bad, you know, times are tough, but then at the end it's gonna be okay.
That little bit of hope.
So, and you can obviously see why that's been used in a lot of religious music.
Yeah,
you know, there's like, oh, but to God is at the end.
Yeah.
But yeah, I just when I listened to it, it just really like, it just like perked my ears up when I heard it. I was like, oh, that's cool.
Kind of shows the mindset, like the characters in as well.
Yeah.
Throughout the song and throughout the whole album, really.
Yeah.
That's one thing about the story throughout this whole album, because it's not like one of those stories where there's a lead single dropped in the middle of the album to try and sell. It's just a story, and it's perfect. And the music, I think, represent, like, they're playing off each other. The vocal and the lyrics and the music are just working together. There's a real cohesive
synergy.
Lots of binding words.
The story is split into two parts, so part one on side one and part two on side two. If we're talking about good old growing up music on the vinyls,
proper music.
Well,
John's favorite.
It is. Hipster now.
Yeah, none of this CD stuff,
John, with these typewriters and vinyls.
CDs.
You still
no I'm on a back, I'm a vinyl man.
Well, a bit more digital now.
CDs, isn't there?
Well,
I still listen to CDs in the car. I have a Watertown CD in the car.
That doesn't surprise us.
It does. Oh, that's good.
Oh, well. So songs 1 through to 6 detail the setting and the mother leaving as well as the narrator's disbelief, whereas part two is centered around depression, nostalgia, longing, and towards the end, the mother calls, and there's a sort of conclusion.
We'll get to that.
Ooh. Yeah, no spoilers.
We'll get to that. I have a bone to pick with her. I know that this is a favourite of a lot of Watertown fans, and some Sinatra fans even think it's one of his best recordings, but Michael and Peter is just an amazing track. The song appears in part one of the story and opens with the father detailing which of his and their mother's features both sons have.
Mm-hmm.
The opening lyrics are, Michael is you, he has your face, he still has your eyes, remember. Peter is me, except when he smiles. Aww.
Mm-hmm.
The track is tinged with some optimism. There is the tiniest dusting of hope throughout the main body of the song. The father is saying, the house could use a paint. You know, your mother is such a saint and she takes the boys whenever she can. But you sure need a man.
Oh.
That girl needs a man. So there's a little theme of loss running through there, a little cheeky, you know, her mom is a single parent as well.
Mm-hmm.
Seems to run in the family.
Mm.
However, there's this, it's filled with this like overall melancholic vibe. It still feels like it's a desperate plea, or if it's a kind of like, okay, everything's going on as normal, just like, just please come back.
Yeah.
Because it's like, you know, lonely.
Yeah.
That's what it feels, to me, that feels.
You need somebody to foot the ladder when he's painting the house.
He does.
Yeah. The album artwork is grey, and adorning the cover is a sullen sketch by Ove Olsen. I think that's Ove. I think it might be Ove. I don't know. But Ove Olsen. Which is beautifully sad. It's a beautifully sad depiction of Watertown train station. Because Watertown is a real place in the outskirts of New York City. It is. Yeah, it is. The train is moving off in the distance, and we see only the fading remnants of the smoke from the train's chimney. Oh.
The station itself is old-looking, very wooden and, you know, mm-hmm. oldie-worldy.
Yeah.
And there's a suburban street with a house just creeping in the left-hand side of the picture there. Ah. And one lone person stood with their back turned to the train track. And for some reason, right, I always thought it was a woman. But now I'm looking at it kind of thing, it's pretty obvious it's the bloke.
Yeah.
The man, it's the main character in the narrator.
Yeah.
I don't know why I thought it was a woman. It's probably like some sort of Freudian slip.
The long coat.
It must be. I always feel like, I don't know, it's a woman going to get her vegetables from the fruit and grocery shop, and that's her bag at
the train
front.
Station.
Yeah. No, well, she might get off the train. You don't get the good produce in New York. You got to go to Watertown.
I think it's a hat. I think he was a hat-wearing fellow.
It is?
Like a piggy blinder.
Mm-hmm.
It is?
You've just noticed that now, haven't you?
I have.
I've been looking at this for 20 seconds.
Michael's sitting much further back than you and spotted this instantly.
It's a man with a long coat and he's holding his hat and he's dishevelled.
Yeah. Well, you would be.
God. Bloody hell.
Mm.
Well, regardless of the person's gender, whether or not it is the narrator or a woman from New York trying to get her best groceries in Watertown, there is a reverse side. it's just what, you know, where the mind wanders.
Mm. Art is what you make of it.
Yeah. I think the person, whoever it may be, is there to emphasize the small town aesthetic.
Yeah.
It's like this. There's nobody else there. There's no cars. The train's leaving. There's just a bit of smoke in the background.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just him standing there.
Yeah.
On the back of the cover, we're shown a typical street scene.
Ooh.
And there's a fire department and some shops. and a couple of houses. It's probably the shops that the woman's going to buy her groceries. But there's some few houses, and there's two little children walking in the rain. Now, I'm going to say it's raining.
Because I mean, it is referenced.
Yeah, it is referencing the. But just looking at it, like there's a little sheen, there's like shading.
Yeah.
And it looks like, he looks like he's got a raincoat on.
Mm.
So
who do you reckon the kids are?
Well,
because
it's the people in the story. It's got to be.
I thought you might go for somebody else.
This is one of the clues that I found out when I was being Inspector Poirot, that might be a man. Because there is Ben's, he's kids, yeah. Can't say Ben's. We are northern.
Yeah.
And Ben is the colloquial term for children.
Yes.
Or child.
So if we're going full northern, you reckon that lad at the train station?
And there is Ben's.
And there is Ben's. So it's not some lass gone to the shops. No.
All right, Ben. All right, calm it down. They've turned it off now. They've gone. No. There's no bustling streets. There's no cars. There's just a guy or girl on the front, and the two little fellas on the back in the raincoats, and it's a very lonely cover. It's grey. It's got this like washed out look. You know, it's just a pen and ink kind of sketch. It's a lovely sketch.
Yeah.
I just
want to interject with something a little bit here. Just while we're talking about the loneliness and the small town feel, just harken back to the instrumentation just for 1 second.
All right, we're on the album cover, but it's okay. I know. Can hark back.
I know. We're just going to hark back right now. But you know, like in normal like Sinatra music, you've got this like, you got this big like triumphant sounding like string and brass sections.
Yeah. Yes.
Like in this like album, I feel that they're more like, you know, like old school Western kind of like songs. Like, you know, like
they're a bit somber, aren't they?
Yeah, yeah. And you know, you could picture like, if you just had them, there was none of the rest of the song. You could kind of picture somebody like riding their horse over the plains.
Yeah,
I like where you're going with this, but I don't really know where you're gonna finish.
No, it's just like it. But like those like
the loneliness. You mean like the lone ranger?
Yeah, and like, you know, like all the towns that they go into in these kind of films are like these really small, like like one street kind of.
Oh, I like it.
Yeah,
it's a good little. It's a theory that.
Yeah,
I like it.
There you go.
I mean, I can kind of understand why it didn't sell as well visually.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't, you know, I imagine in 69 there was some very colourful albums for sale.
Yeah.
But I mean, I would have been drawn to that. I'd be like, what the hell is that? Frank Sinatra?
I mean, sometimes like just having something that looks a little bit different, it doesn't matter like what it actually is, but if there's like so many like really vibrant colours going on like on like a rack.
Yeah.
And you saw that one that's just really... Yeah. Just want like monochromatic.
Yeah.
Just be like, ooh.
That's nice. I like that.
Yeah.
Obviously people weren't thinking like that when in the 60s when
no.
Full of drugs. No. Ask me right now. Ask me, is this in my top 10 favourite album covers of all time?
John.
Yes.
Is this in your top 10 favourite album covers of all time?
It is, yeah.
I would have loved it if you'd just like, no.
It is not.
No, it is. It is. It actually is. For all, it's a very somber thing. I just think it's really cool. It captures the aesthetic. I like it when you have an album as a whole.
Yeah,
it's not just like a random cover to try and draw people in. It helps deepen the narrative. It tells a story.
Yeah,
I think that's really cool.
Yeah. Okay, so we've talked a lot about like how great this album is, and just to balance this,
where are you going with this?
Right,
where are you going?
I just want to throw out there one thing that I do not like about this album.
I can't believe this.
Right,
I'm listening.
Child choirs,
ah,
the bane of my. Every time I hear a song with one of them in, I'm like, nah.
Yeah,
I'm glad you sat through it though.
I did, like, just because like the, you know, it's not a bad song.
No,
and it. Thankfully, it doesn't occur a lot.
Mm.
But like, do you remember like a few years ago, 30 Seconds to Mars brought an album out and literally every song had a child choir in it?
I do know what you mean. It's not it's not my favorite. Like, I get shivers when it's like, you can't always get what you want.
Yeah.
Always reminds me of The Snowman.
I do agree.
Yeah.
I do agree.
Not that like, this is actually used in quite a good way. It's very sparing.
It's tasteful.
And it's just my kind of...
That's your opinion.
It is my opinion.
And you're allowed it.
But so it doesn't change my view of the album.
That's good. Yeah. See, that's a grown-up view.
That is.
The whole album, kind of like, to kind of wrap things up, it clocks in at around 34 minutes, which is quite short, really.
It is, yeah.
It's nice. It's not too long. It's not like... Some concept albums go on forever.
Yeah.
And this is just a nice 34 minutes. Doesn't it? You could do it on your lunch break.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's perfectly weighted. It's just long enough to share the melancholic journey with the narrator just while you're having your bait, mm-hmm. while you're having some food. Oh, there's another one. Bait.
Yeah.
Bait means food.
I don't know if I want to go graft after listening
Stop
to this.
Stop it. Honestly, I have to say, it's got to be like up there with one of the greatest as one of the greatest albums of all time. It's like, you know,
mm-hmm.
as far as stories mm-hmm. go in albums.
Yeah, definitely.
There's very many try to tell stories and fail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's
interesting as well that this didn't do very well.
Yeah.
Because it's so good.
Yeah.
And like normally, you know, when you have like, they brought out like a concept album, it's a bit different. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes people like eat that up.
Yeah.
You know, say, ooh, mm-hmm. something new. But, and like mm-hmm. sometimes, you know, you get albums that are really, really popular that aren't very good.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
I thought like Sinatra fans would eat this up as well.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's a bit different, but it's still.
On a human level.
Yeah.
It's really interesting.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's crazy. But now it's regarded as, you know,
yeah.
his best album
mm-hmm.
by a lot of fans. But
yeah.
As it should be.
Okay. We're just going to notify everybody listening that there is a spoiler to the ending. Like, it's ahead. It's coming.
Mm.
So this is
need like a big alarm.
Fair warning. Give me a siren. That's your fair warning. That you can pause this podcast right now and go give Frank Sinatra half an hour of your time and listen to Watertown so it won't be ruined for you. And then come back. Here we go. We're back.
Welcome back.
It has to be one of the saddest endings to an album. It's sadder than the producer's kids crying at the end of the album Berlin by Lou Reed.
I don't understand that reference.
What?
Well, at the end of Lou Reed's Berlin, there are some children crying.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason they're crying is because the producer at the time wanted the kids to give... He wanted to cry, and he wanted to be a real cry. So what he did, he came home from a long day in the studio.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
He sat the children down, he went, "Your mom's died in a car crash."
What? What? That's fucking nuts.
"She's dead, she's not coming back." And those kids...
And then he held the microphone right up to them.
And then those kids are crying, and they're shouting like, "Mommy," in the background and everything.
That's not okay.
And she wasn't. She was just at work.
That's
what
awful.
An absolute bastard.
In the name of art, Michael. And that is bad. And it's sadder than that.
It is.
So we know where John draws the line.
All right. What we're going to say here is what happens at the end of the album. And, you know, the narrator's wife has gone. She's gone to New York City for whatever reason. She's gone for the big lights. She's mm-hmm. seen a few films. She's seen a bit. She's writing back.
She's just went to the cinema. That's all she went for.
Which she's written back. And the penultimate song on the album is She Says. And what do you think she says?
I think she says, "She's coming home."
She's coming home! She's coming home. And then the final track is this joyous tune. It's uplifting. The narrator is just, you know, he's getting ready. He's going to the train station. He's boisterous. He's ready. And it starts to rain. The station clears. She's not there.
She didn't go home.
What a fucking bitch!
You know, like, I want to go, and like, I know it's obviously not like a like an autobiographical thing, but like, I just want to go give Frank Sinatra a hug.
Honestly,
just be like, "Who hurt you, John? John?
I'm hurt. I'm hurt.
Who hurt you, Frank?
I know. Like, God." That's heartbreaking.
Yeah,
he's not there. Like, all the people...
It's the way the music builds up to it, though.
Oh,
as if, like,
you're so ready. You're like,
definitely
oh, my God,
gonna go home.
If you turn it off early, you'd be like, "Shit, that's it. I don't need to listen to the end."
And then the last, like, minute, it's just...
She's not there.
It's his realisation that, actually, I would have spotted her a long time ago if she was there.
Yeah, the lyrics... It's so good, the way that the lyrics are written. It's like... Anybody who likes lyrics in songs, it's just perfect. But it's just the way you're, like... He's looking through the crowds of faces and he can't see it, and she's just not there.
Yeah,
I kind of believe it. I'm just,
it is a big.
I give a piece of my mind,
especially when a lot of albums would end on the happy note, that like, oh, they're getting back together, and then this one, it just drops you in it, and you're like, oh, I was expecting the happy ending with the big happy song at the end, and then
You think it's going to be like a really cathartic kind of like, this is what I needed just to end the top the story off, and then you can get on with your day. But you know,
I'm going to have another glass of whiskey after that.
They did actually release a song that like sort of is an epilogue,
right? Mm-hmm.
It's called Lady Day, but we'll not get into that because that's not the true album form. That is not the true album form. This, as it runs, like it ends with the train, the song The Train, and that's where it should end because it's just a beautiful piece of work.
It is.
Beautiful piece of art. And everybody should go and listen to Watertown and just feel that anger towards that woman. Leaving those kids.
Yeah. And poor Frank.
Poor Frank, even though it's not Frank, but poor narrator.
Mm.
Mm-hmm. Oh, man.
That's a, for argument's sake, we'll call him Frank.
So that concludes our little Watertown appreciation episode. Thanks very much for listening. If you want to visit our website, it's www.thelinernotespodcast.com. You can see our pictures and posts on Instagram at thelinernotespodcast.
Yep, you can visit us on Twitter at @linerpodcast.
Ooh. And you can find us on Facebook at thelinernotespcast. You can also email us if you want to, you know, give us a little comment, if you want to give us a suggestion of something that you want to hear, and you can email us at thelinernotespodcast.social@gmail.com. Woo! Thank you very much for listening.
Yep. Tatty Biz.
Tatty Bizzle.
So long. So long.
So long.